Getting on into chapter 16, I heard a great voice. Incidentally, if you want to, you can call this the great chapter. The word great occurs 11 times in this chapter. First one is a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. Now, if you want to make a comparison of the pestilences that fell on Egypt in the days of Israel, their deliverance, you will find a great similarity. The first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and a grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. This is a select judgment for a select group of people. I have often stated, God has never yet hit the wrong man. If you read Ezekiel 9, you will find that in vision, somebody went through the city and marked those that were to be spared. And in Revelation 9, these locusts that came out of the bottomless pit were to torment those men, only those that had the seal of God in their foreheads, they were to be spared. Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, Lot escaped. They were the ones that were left. Sodom and Gomorrah was taken in judgment. In Genesis earlier, the world was taken in death, Lot and his family were left. And the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every soul died in the sea. Remember back in the 8th chapter in the 9th verse, the third angel, the third of the creatures which are in the sea and the ships died and were destroyed. And notice this sore, noisome and grievous, are two words in Greek for evil. Anybody here that sat in Greek class remember what they were? Poneros, kakos. Both words are used here. I'll let you look them up if you want to, but poneros is the word, you remember, the whole world lieth in wickedness, or in the wicked one. In John 5, this is the same word. There it's used of Satan, what we call substantively. Like we say, the dead are raised. What kind of dead? Dead animals? Well, we mean dead men. We know that that's used substantively. We don't have to say men. And it's used of Satan, kakos and poneros, sore. A sore can be such an uncomfortable thing. What'd you call it? AIDS? AIDS? Well, you're not going to find me crying about it. Is that right? Well, speaking of the same class of people now, in the first chapter of Romans, receiving within themselves the recompense of their error, which is meet or fit. So it could be God's judgment. This is one of the prime sins that came on why Sodom and Egypt experienced what they did. Now you remember this, it's being pretty plainly. They turned down Lot's virgin daughters. They wanted those men. That was the, that's the sin that was held before us. This is the sin for which a curse came upon Canaan, Ham's son. And you remember it was the Canaanites that were destroyed by Joshua and his people. And later, those that were left, Solomon made slaves out of them. This was the crime that brought the curse. I'm going to tell you this. God never just passes over thoughtlessly over any sin. And this sin, or crime, had the death penalty under the law of Moses. It's classed with the worst sins in the New Testament. It's mentioned several times. The word effeminate in 1 Corinthians 6 is this same word. In Timothy, it's those that defile themselves with mankind. Same word. The second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. This could be literal, or it could be the nations. It's a little thing to God. We think of the immensity of it. But you see, the river Nile is the longest watershed in the world, and God turned it into blood. And this lasted 3 days, if I remember right. The third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. Now the next statements imply that this was real blood. Notice the fifth verse. I heard the angel of the waters, and we believe it means the angel that poured out his vial on the rivers, say, Thou art righteous, O Lord, which art and wast and shalt be, because Thou hast judged us. They agree with God. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets. Now that's blood, isn't it? And thou hast given them blood to drink. So it could, well, how easily God can do it. Another out of the altar, that is, the marginal says, and correctly, I heard the altar say, Calvary speaking, Christ speaking, even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments. The word altar occurs some 8 times in the book of Revelation. A number of lessons here, but another subject. The fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. Can't heat make you miserable? I watched some men who worked at a smelter one time, and they mixed the ore. This was in 39. They mixed the ore with a fine coal and put it in here where it would burn. And when they opened this, a molten zinc ran out. And those men were stripped to the waist, and they had ice water at each end, and the sweat was literally running. I don't mean just perspiration, it was running. And when they finished this run, they'd have a whole string of these. It just, what I'd call flop, just stretch full length on the ground. Well, it will be this way then, only it won't be furnaces, it'll be everywhere. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. I was at a camp meeting in Topeka once when the heat was 110 degrees, and that was in the Depression. I knew 2 people that owned an electric fan. Kind of rough time. Men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God. The power of the Satan will be so bad that men will be more deluded than ever. He had power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. The fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat, that is the throne of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. This brings to our mind a time back in Egypt when it was so dark that it could be felt. And in Revelation 9:2 it says, the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke. That's an earlier scene in Revelation. But this will perhaps be, well, utter and absolute confusion. Remember, the book of Isaiah said, darkness shall cover the earth and gross darkness the people. This will be, well, the beast will have charge of things for a while, but suddenly, you remember, the magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But he went on. And the people said, how long is it that you won't let the people go? Don't you know that Egypt is destroyed? And these people that get all the sores, and that are scorched with the sun, and they will see these other powers rising against the beast, and I feel that utter despair will grip men, and confusion. You think you have all the reins in your hand, and suddenly you don't have any of them in your hand. Forces from the east are coming in, forces from the north are coming in. Everybody's not submitting as well as he did. What's the matter? They blasphemed the name of God because of their pains and their sores, and repented not of their deeds. The sixth angel poured out his vial upon the river, the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. While a modern army might find no difficulty here, the people of that part of the world, as you know, would. But they will find a way to get there, and you'll remember in the 9th chapter we read of 4 angels that were bound to Euphrates that would be loosed. And now here are 3 unclean spirits. This is the second time where somebody was permitted to see an evil spirit. Remember Micaiah of the Old Testament that saw the spirit that came before the Lord and said, I'll be a lying spirit in the mouth of Ahab's prophets. Now a woman told me one time, said, she was back of one of the big boys' tents, Roberts or some of them. She said, I looked around, there was a brown demon sitting on my shoulder. And she said, I rushed up to the front of the tent. And they kept it up, and I didn't want to get into it. Finally, she said, what do you think about it, Brother Franklin? And I reminded her of several things. You don't see demons, do you? You ever see one? And I said, why would you be any safer in front of a tent than in the back of a tent? If a demon were in this room and I could see him on my shoulder, would I be any safer here or back yonder in the back of the building or over there by the table? One of them had said a demon got him down and nearly choked him to death. And it went on and on. And I sometimes feel like people really go out of their way to glorify demons. I say they have demonitis. Everything is a demon. But there are demons. And we don't need to close our eyes to this fact nor ever deny it. They're around about us. They try to hinder in every way they can, but here they're going to be used to bring, perhaps in the forms of cheap oratory, people on radio and television, people in person, inspiring men to do that which is evil. How men were inspired to go on the Crusades into Palestine was an amazing thing to me. These are the spirits of devils working miracles which go forth. Notice where they come from, a trinity of evil, the dragon, the beast, and his prophet called the false prophet. Several times here in the book of Revelation, he's called the false prophet. To the battle of that great day of God Almighty, and shall I say, guess who will win? Jesus said, I come as a thief. A thief isn't expected. He comes in the night. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. It is said in olden times that at night men were put to watch in the temple. And every once in a while the high priest would sneak out at night. And if he caught somebody asleep before he was aware of what was taking place, he unrobed him and turned him loose. He was caught. He had to walk naked. And the gathering together will be into a place called in Hebrew tongue Armageddon. If you want to read the fifth chapter of Judges, you will find that this is where Deborah and Barak met with the forces of Sisera. This is where dear Josiah was wounded and later died. And as I stated, it's 60 miles approximately northwest of Jerusalem. It would be good for you if you would take the atlas, rather the maps in the back of your Bible, and find it. Find Megiddo. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple. Now there's a great similarity in the sounding of the trumpets, but there's a great difference too. The similarities do not mean that they were the same. Just like the plagues in Egypt, where there's a similarity, but they weren't the same. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temples of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. Jesus cried from the cross, it is finished. In Revelation 21, we will read again when we get there, but I'll just call your attention to it now. Heard a great voice, it is done, or it is finished. I don't just see the verse. 6, he said, it is done. I heard a fellow, he had a very big voice, he was a whirling, and he wanted to sound very dramatic. Up the words that Jesus uttered on the cross come booming down the ages, it is done. Jesus said, it is finished. It's always comical when the world tries to handle the Bible. Here, we're right down toward the very end of the Great Tribulation. There are some other things to take place. The Lord will not have been revealed yet, but remember, these are the last plagues. They come definitely during the reign of Antichrist. Notice the first one is that he poured his vial on the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast. And this comes in after the middle of the week, that is the mark of the beast. And then we follow the plagues. Some of them may happen at the same time, but they are the ones that fill up or complete the wrath of God. Notice there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, probably the last one. Now notice the magnitude of this, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. Did you ever read about the mighty earthquake that shook the Missouri River bottom or valley many years ago? Sister Agers has, Brother. If it had been a populated area at that time, there would have been so many deaths and the damage would have been extensive. There's still a large lake down in there that was just made because of this. An earthquake off the coast of Italy some many years ago killed 200,000 people. Here is one that's going to diminish them all. Even the instruments may fall apart, the seismographs that measure them. Notice the word great. So mighty an earthquake and so great. Back in the sixth chapter, we read of an earthquake. When Jesus, in the connection of Jesus' death, there seem to have been two earthquakes. In the 11th chapter, there will be an earthquake. Earthquakes are mentioned in Matthew 24. An earthquake is mentioned in the book of Zechariah that had taken place in Israel. Another Greet. The Greet city was divided into three parts. The cities of the nations fell. Can you imagine? Some of the most devastating earthquakes have lasted as long as 18 seconds. And in that time, cities have just tumbled down. A tornado can react so quick. I was standing in the door of a restaurant in 1971, and I said to somebody, "Look at those trees, how they're shaking." Didn't give it any thought, and when I started home, we were in a tornado, and I didn't know it. And there was a huge tree. I couldn't drive home. I had to back up and turn around and take another street. Huge tree right across the street. How quickly God can do things when he wants to. There's that wind in the time of Elijah that rent the rocks. Did you ever see a wind hard enough to rend the rocks? I pastored in Yale, Oklahoma some years ago, and the Baptist people built a nice building out in the country out of cobblestone. And a tornado hit the area, and it just pushed those walls in. And when they hit the floor of the church, they caved the basement in. And if you ever saw a jumbled up mess, a little old shanty out here short ways off, it didn't bother it at all. And the cities of the nations fell. I've been in many of the great cities of the nation, Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, New York, and others of the great cities of the nation. And I've been in many of the great cities of the world, such as Bombay and Madras and Rome, Athens, Cairo. They don't mean much to God. They're just the works of men. And he's manifested twice that Jerusalem didn't mean much to him. And Great Babylon, we'll get the details of this in 17 and 18. Great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Terrible statement, isn't it? Notice the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Every island fled away and the mountains were not found. There fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. If you make it the lightest, it can be 80 pounds. That was a talent of brass, a talent of silver about 90, a talent of gold up to 120. Now some years ago, I remember the time, but I didn't live there. There was a hail in Weston. Calvin Toy is a builder, and he said in patching a roof, he said, "Now I don't say one hailstone made it, but he said I could put a half gallon bucket down through that hole." Now a hailstone that big would kill you, I suppose, like that, wouldn't it? But the hail did kill grown animals. Yes, it would. I saw one hailstone. I measured it on my fist. My fist was a little bigger then. It reached from here to here. It wasn't round. It was jagged. That was a pretty good sized hailstone. It killed hogs and cattle, that hailstone did. I read quite a lengthy article some time ago about a hailstorm in Turkey. It said the noise coming sounded like a freight train. And then it said the hail that fell was just about the size of your foot. To think of something like this, I just wonder what hailstones this size would do. Would they come clear through the roof and through the floor? I believe a falling object gains a speed of around 260 miles an hour, doesn't it? And that's for something that size and striking something, it would be quite devastating. It doesn't take a real large hailstone to dent a car. Men blaspheme God because of the plagues of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. Remember the treasures of hail in the book of Job that God speaks of. Briefly now in 17, then we will dismiss for the evening. There came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying, "Come hither, and I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters." Now let's turn to the 20th chapter just a moment. This angel gives John a picture, in the 19th chapter, this angel now told John to write, and in the 10th verse, "I fell at his feet to worship him, and he said unto me, See thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant unto thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God." And then in the 21st chapter, in the 9th verse, another one of those angels comes to him and showed him the bride, the Lamb's wife, that holy city. And when this vision was over, in the 8th verse, John fell at his feet to worship him. And this one said, "See thou do it not, for I am thy fellow servant, and of thy brethren the prophets, and of them that keep the sayings of this book. Worship God." Now this indicates that just as we read in Corinthians 6, the saints shall judge the world. We believe these seven angels to represent saints. We believe the living creatures that gave them the vials. Remember back in the 15th chapter, one of the four beasts gave the seven angels the seven vials. Notice the seventh verse, one of the four beasts gave unto the seven angels seven golden vials full of the wrath of God, who liveth forever and ever. That we learn from Revelation 4 and 5 that these represent the people of God. We learn here that these angels that pour out the vials are the people of God. Corinthians 6 says, "Know ye not that the saints shall judge the world? Know ye not that we shall judge angels?" And so I think that's what we're seeing in this 16th chapter. And then these two are given tasks. And here is the fourth vision viewpoint. In chapter 17, John is asked to come, and he's going to be shown the judgment of apostate Christendom. The 17th chapter won't show us much of the judgment, but the 18th chapter will. And I know the various commentators speak of religious Babylon, political Babylon, and commercial Babylon, but it seems to me that we have Babylon, the woman that was on the back of the beast. And you will find some commentators, and I touch on this because you will run into it frequently, that believe there's going to be another Babylon built on the bank of the Euphrates, and that that's going to be the city that will be judged. For my own satisfaction, I can prove that this will not be the case. Notice this woman sits, she's called the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. The 15th verse, the waters are interpreted. The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So we get an idea of the fact that she has an influence over all the world. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been drunk, made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman set upon a scarlet colored beast. This is the beast we saw in Revelation 13, and we believe this scene comes early, because you see there will come the time when the beast will declare himself God. And then he's not going to have any woman around representing God. Not a system. It's not a literal woman. It's a system. That's one of the reasons he will make war with the Jewish remnant. Everything that represents God is to be destroyed. So this takes us back a ways.